In this episode of the Smart City Podcast, I had some great discussion with Daniel Fletcher. Daniel is the General Manager of Communities for the Central Highlands Regional Council and is very passionate about supporting and nourishing regional communities. As you know, I'm also very passionate about the regional areas, so Daniel and I had some great conversations about this. Daniel also shares about what Central Highlands Regional Council is doing in the smart city space and how he is trying to close the technology gap for the communities. As always, I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
It's the Smart City Podcast, whoa, with smart city experts, here we go. Connecting smart technology, both big and small. Smart cities are making life better for all. Big data, emerging trends, self-driving cars and more. The Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.
Hello, Daniel. How are you?
I'm wonderful, Zoe. How are you?
I'm very well. Let's just jump straight into this. And can you tell us a little bit about your background and what you're passionate about?
I certainly can. I'll try not to bore you with all the boring stuff, but my background consists of a comparatively short time in local government where I am situated now. So I'm the General Manager of Communities at the Central Highlands Regional Council. But prior to that, I studied psychology and criminology. That was foundational for me as I left school. And I then, during that time, I was fortunate to also study a year overseas in Slovenia, which I think is important for me because it certainly shaped quite heavily my thinking. I was immersed in a different culture, and Slovenia is located in Central Europe, so it definitely gives you access to a lot of the European countries with relative ease. So I got the opportunity to travel through a lot of Europe when I was a bit younger, and again that sort of shaped my thinking around communities and around what we can be doing now. When I finished my studies, I worked in the prison in the psychological assessment team for nearly 3 years, and that was again something that shaped my thinking quite dramatically. I've also worked in private industry for a while, and then I came full circle back to local government about 5 years ago now. So I was working at Logan City Council at the time, and about 18 months ago I located myself out based out of Emerald for Central Highlands Regional Council. But the things that are passionate for me are definitely the community. So all of my work in some way, shape or form has been connected to the community or a community approach to things. So I'm definitely really keen to maintain that within my career. And I guess I'm very passionate about livable, attractive and economically sustainable communities. That's definitely a part of what I enjoy doing, working with local government. And I'm fortunate to also sit on the Policy and Leadership Task Force for the Smart Cities Council with yourself.
Cool. Well, let's talk about what sparked your interest in this kind of smart city space, because you've got such a wide and varied, interesting background. So why the smart city space?
Well, I think, again, I was extremely fortunate to have been given that opportunity to travel when I was younger. And I now, as of earlier this year, have clocked up 37 countries. So for me, that's really great. I've had the opportunity to see lots of different communities, lots of different cultures, lots of different ways that they embed what is a smart city, although I'm going to adjust the term city to community, a smart community approach to the way that they live their lives in many other countries. So I was fortunate to immerse myself in as many of those communities as I could. And I think I've, again, been able to see some incredibly advanced communities, whether that's as a byproduct of technology or digitization or other means of, I guess, just general continuous improvement, and some other communities who are not so advanced as we would consider in the contemporary sense, but were advanced in other ways. So I again got to travel through Africa and do a lot of travel through there, which, you know, by its very nature is not as technologically advanced as many other countries, but some of the ways that they source food and water are quite incredible, and we can learn from that. So I think that generally sparked my interest in what is a smart communities approach and how we're evolving our communities, whether it be through technology, through decision making, all of that. So I'm not really sure where it started or how it started, but I certainly have that connection and that passion for communities and the growth of communities. So,
Yeah, cool. So I think you've kind of answered the next question, which is, what is a smart city to you?
Well, I did mention to you earlier that this was the only question I'd sort of prepared for, and I'd like to keep...
That's why I thought I'd better ask it.
I'd like to keep these definitions, so to speak, really simple. And I guess if I'm asked that question, what is a smart city or what is a smart community, to me it's simple. It's a smart community is digitally connected to its infrastructure, citizens, and future. That's as simple as it should be, I think.
I like that. Cool. So why do you think that this concept is so important for our communities?
Making intelligent decisions for the benefit of the community has always been important, I suppose. But now with the evolution of technology, which is really upon us at warp speed, I think it's important more than ever to introduce, I guess, intelligent ways, intelligent concepts of building that community, which embeds the digital and the technological component to it. So I guess at any moment we shouldn't lose, we should not fear losing what we once were as a community and be able to embrace something different, which is going to be able to provide benefit for all. And I think there's a real balance between that fear of the technology and the warp speed in which it's taking over some of our lives. But I think that's probably why it's so important that we really start to embed that in our decision making, because it's happening whether we like it or not, and we just need to find a way for it to be an essential part of decision making.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. So let's talk about some of the projects and things you're currently working on.
Well, at Central Highlands Regional Council at the moment, we have recently adopted a fairly rigorous and robust capital projects prioritisation methodology. So that's something that is not necessarily revolutionising, but it's certainly something new from a local government perspective. And we used it in the preparation for our 2018-2019 budget, which will soon be deliberated on by our councillors. But it in itself includes a sort of a multi-factored criteria around things like economic benefits, social benefit, environmental benefits, which we haven't necessarily used before. And I think a lot of local governments are slowly starting to build into their whether it's capital or operating project prioritisation. But that methodology is really important, and I know that there are some smart cities across the globe that are well advanced in terms of using this type of methodology. So we're pretty proud of one of those, of that in particular, that we've been able to embed into our operational thinking here. We're also in the middle of developing our actual smart community strategy. So we've I think like most local governments and other organisations connected to a smart city or smart community approach, we've been working, I guess, project to project in isolation, and we're now starting to embed and invest the resources into getting that strategy and action plan developed so that it gives us a pretty clear direction for the future. So we've had sort of one initial stakeholder meeting there, and we've got a lot of work to do getting our community and stakeholders on board with contributing to that that actual plan. So we're sort of right in the middle of getting that rolling at the moment. What else have we got? We're looking to really create, maybe I'll call it, some advanced multi-user spaces. So I think regionally we're certainly disadvantaged from that. There is a digital divide, whether we're able to quantify it or not. I mean, certainly things like the Black Spot project, although wasn't funded in the recent federal budget, it's certainly an indicator of the digital divide that exists. And we're suffering, I think, in regional areas from the advancement of other commercial businesses. And if I make an example or use an example such as the banking sector, so they're very well advanced, they're very technologically savvy, very digitized in their approach, and we're starting to see the closure of physical banks in regional areas, and that creates some concern for our smaller communities. It creates concern for the citizens who are not as technological or digitally savvy with online banking. And I guess for most people, that's it's a relatively simple concept, but for some regional areas, it hasn't been a necessity. They haven't needed to do it. And as a consequence of not having strong connectivity to the internet, they also haven't had the means to do that either. So we're certainly battling one of those issues and, I guess, working through that multi-user space of council buildings which are in existence, hosting web sessions between banks and citizens is something we're looking at really progressing in the next 6 to 12 months. It's, again, probably not earth-shattering in and of itself, but nonetheless it's something that we haven't had to do in regional Queensland or regional Australia for a while because the physical banks have maintained a presence, but we're starting to see that that's dissipating now. So our investment as a local government into those small communities is going to be critical to not only maintaining the actual community itself, but also to keeping the regional communities up to speed with the advancement of technology and the digital economy. So that's something we're definitely battling with at the moment. If you were to extend on that, we're just looking at making sure all of our projects, really, particularly those projects that lend themselves to including a digital component, are being designed and built with that in mind. So traditionally, we wouldn't have done that. We would have just seen the implementation of a project at our Botanic Gardens, for example, that just enhanced the footpaths and the fitness equipment and everything else without a digital component. But we're actually now building digital into our infrastructure in those areas. So that's something that's, while it might only be small, that there's lots of small things that we can do across our region are certainly going to help us. And we do have a number of projects in terms of augmented reality in some of our parks as well for our tourism. Well, not mainly for our tourism, but primarily our tourists that travel through the region do get their smartphones out and use all the augmented reality elements to some of that work. So we're certainly seeing an uptake of the digital elements in our projects already.
Yeah, cool. Oh, it sounds like you guys are doing quite a lot. Like, I know you said it's not earth-shattering, but I think the smart city concept in itself is not earth-shattering. It's about taking those small steps to really making people's lives better. And so that's really awesome. I want to ask you more about that because I'm really passionate about the regional areas. And I think that, yeah, you say it's not earth shattering, but some of these things really are for some people. Like, you know, if they can access a bank, if they can't access a bank, then, you know, that will feed into their decision to maybe leave the area. Or, you know, if you can't access a bank, then what hope, and, you know, do we have it having really cool tech projects kind of out there to keep the people that want to live there, you know, excited and involved in the community. So, yeah, I think it's really awesome.
It is a real challenge that we are facing, not only in, I think, regional areas, but even certainly the rural remote areas, anywhere that there's no one that's connected or has a consistent connection. What we're finding is that it's been that way for a long time, but also it's not very attractive for a new, it doesn't even need to be a banking, a bank or something, some business that is technologically advanced. We're really finding that the attractiveness of an area is now becoming, is now highly dictated by the fact of it being connected to the internet. So we're seeing lots of businesses that are not coming to the area. In actual fact, they're leaving. And it's really deteriorates from the sense of belonging for that community—it's quite a challenge and quite a frustration that we're certainly going to continue to work on with our other partners and other levels of government to continue to support that. Because I think one thing we do know at this stage very clearly that we'll all be naked and hungry without farming, and it's a real challenge to make sure that we provide that support, not from an equal perspective, but from an equitable perspective. So glad, very keen to always have this conversation so we can support our regional areas.
Yeah, and I think it comes down to, you know, the kind of backbone, you know, that foundational infrastructure that's, you know, digital infrastructure that's, you know, that's really boring, but actually then enables that connectivity. And I think, you know, there's lots of talk about, you know, the shiny toy type scenarios, but for the regions, it's actually laying that foundation. You know, they don't have access to the, you know, I don't want to say NBN, but, you know.
I'm glad you said it and not me, Zoe, but we're certainly finding some serious challenges with that in our region, and I would definitely won't go into the details, but I will note there was an article very recently, and Winton Shire have been very forthcoming in their willingness to attract what has been now 4G small cell satellites in their area. So I know there's another 199 or so sites to be rolled out across the country. So there are, I guess, the technology is on its way. It's just quite a lag between where the regional areas find themselves and then actually being connected into that technology. So we need to keep it front of mind for all of the smart city, smart community stakeholders.
Definitely. Well, let's go on to integration. So how do you think that we can better integrate across, you know, the different disciplines, governments, industries, academia, and, you know, the city-region type relationships as well?
Well, it's amazing what can be achieved when you do not care who gets the credit. So I think we've, as a country, our competitive nature is, we're inherently competitive. And I guess when you look at our national sports, we punch well above our weight there. Australia's well known for our competitive and sporting prowess, but I think internally we really struggle to see the benefits from collaborating. And I think one of the other things that's well documented is some of those smart cities around the world that are recognised as smart cities. They have just broken down those barriers. They've just completely removed any issue between levels of government, between the community, between stakeholders. And I think we're still we're definitely dragging the chain on that one. So places like Barcelona, Seoul, New York, even to a large extent, even Cincinnati, they have just completely opened themselves up to not winning awards internally, but just understanding the benefit of the community should be at the forefront. And I think that's definitely something we need to embrace a little bit more. Unfortunately, we do have, you know, political agendas which drive decision making, but nonetheless, all of the political persuasions are in some way connected and some way supportive of the smart cities and smart communities approach. It's a matter of how we operationalize that to get some practical benefits. So I don't know the answer, Zoe, but I'm hoping that the continual conversation around collaboration as opposed to competitiveness is probably going to see some changes in that area.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think you do have the answer. It's not a, you know, it's not a five-step system, but it definitely is a start to changing the way we think about, yeah, competition and collaboration. And I think it's already starting to change. Like I recently just started working for myself. And so just the change in thinking that I had to have, because I used to work for the government, and it really is changing. It's not about, oh, well, you know, you did this and I did this, so you can get that award and I'll get this award or whatever it is. It's like, no, what's the best outcome? And then, you know, I think if you're all working towards a common goal and you're all being positive and, you know, human at the end of the day, then the greatest reward is the outcome, right?
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it any better myself.
And I know that sounds very, I don't know, pie in the sky, naively optimistic, but I really think that that's the way it's going to happen. It's going to the way that we're going to do business is changing. And I think it doesn't matter whether you're just, you know, if you're private industry or government or councils, I have the same conversations with, like, on this podcast with people from government, from industry, from, you know, small tech startups. And I can have the same conversation across all the different disciplines because people are coming at it from a human perspective, I think. So, yeah, no, it's awesome.
I do feel, again, privileged to have my background rooted in psychology and social psychology, and having worked in the prison and having worked with people and communities in my current role in my background as well, I do think that we, and I know, I do note that many of your other podcasts have spoken about this as well, that connection between people, not losing the value of that and the meaning of that while we continue to embrace an ever-increasing technological advancement. So I think the people that are going to get it right are the ones that find the balance between what technology is needed and how that's going to actually impact their community, and what technology is not needed and not going to draw away from the value of people and face-to-face and all of the meaning that that brings.
Yeah, cool. So let's move on to emerging trends. So have you got any ideas about the ones that people aren't talking about at the moment?
Ooh, that would be good if we had the insights to everything that people weren't talking about. I think if I draw some, I guess, comparisons to central Queensland and where I'm from, I think there's going to be a connection in some way, shape or form to the decentralisation of major cities, in particular in Australia. So I know we see in many other countries the high density living and the value that that brings. But by circumstance, a lot of other countries are forced into that scenario due to the geographical layout or design of their country, whereas we're really not. We have an abundance of land, of space. Some of the challenges include water security and being able to allocate that appropriately for communities. But I think, I think one of the really big trends which technology will help solve in some way is manifesting itself in the decentralization of the major cities in Australia. What that looks like, I don't know, but that's probably my little insight there. I think some people are talking about this one in terms of the banking and Bitcoin and cryptocurrency and that type of technology. I do think we're completely underprepared for what's going to happen in that space. We've seen time and time again that our regulations in Australia are very primitive. I can say that without being insensitive. That it's very difficult to be fluid and to adapt really quickly. So I definitely think the world of banking and cryptocurrency is going to create a significant problem in the next 5 to 10 years for Australia.
Yeah, interesting. Cool. Well, it's been awesome to chat with you this afternoon. I really just have one last question, which is how can people connect with you?
I'm happy for anybody to look me up on LinkedIn. That's probably the easiest way, I think. I'm not on any other social media, so that's the only way people can connect with me. So, LinkedIn's the best way to do it.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much. It was really great. I love having these conversations when we kind of bring it back to I really love talking about the regions. I know it's called the Smart City Podcast, but it's so important that we bring these smart technologies and smart concepts out to the regions, because I think we definitely don't want to create a larger gap than there already is. We actually want to start closing that technology gap. So thanks so much for coming on.
No worries. I think if I can finish off by saying that I know in particular the Central Highlands area in Queensland are not as, I don't want to be as cliche as saying open for business, but the reality is the areas out here, we have agriculture, mining and tourism, some of our biggest commodities, and all of which very well advanced in terms of their research and development in technology, but we're just seeing some of the smart city stakeholders, I guess, keep themselves connected to the cities, so to speak. And I think if a couple of them want to venture out into the regional areas, there would be a massive benefit, a massive value for value capture anyway, in terms of what can be provided to the communities out this way, and also for those particular businesses. So open for business, Zoe, the regional areas are.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for finishing on that note. And it was so great to speak with you, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Wonderful. Thanks, Zoe.
Thanks. Bye.
It's the Smart City Podcast. Whoa.
Thanks so much for listening to the Smart City Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes can be found at thesmartcitypodcast.com. If you have any questions or comments for me or any of my guests, connect with me via email, zoe@thesmartcitypodcast.com, or via the socials. I'm on Twitter and Facebook at Smart City Pod. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.